I want to speak this morning on unusual, unexpected, and unexplainable. If you and I had our own way, we would avoid the unusual. We would skip the unexpected and dance around the unexplainable. After all, we're way too busy, too stressed, and much too focused to deal with the difficulty and the change that unusual brings, the havoc that ensues when what we want and what we need is not found in the places we expected to find it. And to figure out how to respond to the mysteries that are bigger and more complex than what we can deal with today. So if I were to say to you, get ready for the unusual, prepare for the unexpected, and watch for the unexplainable, you would not be the only person in the room who was uncomfortable and a little bit nervous. We're in Mark chapter 6, and we come up against one of the most challenging miracles to both understand and to apply to our own lives today. And in verse 12, a verse that we were talking about 2 weeks ago when we were together in this same chapter, a section that Jesus takes his disciples and he sends them out two by two, and he to tell everyone that they meet to repent of their sins and to turn to God. And on this missions trip, the disciples experienced the same miracles and operated under the same anointing, the same authority that they had watched Jesus operate under. And they too saw demons released from the lives of people, saw sick people healed. And that's where Mark brings us back after having told the story of John the Baptist that Pastor Mark covered last week. Or Pastor Mark, boy, I am historical. Pastor Eric, that goes back a few years now. Pastor Eric covered it last week. And so we're in Mark chapter 6, verse 30. The apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and taught. And then Jesus said, let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while. He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. When the 12 returned to Jesus, he asks them to tell what they had seen, what they had heard, what they'd experienced, and give a report of their tour of duty. And Jesus listens, and as they tell the story, they instruct, and Jesus instructs and adjusts and encourages and explains all that they had seen and heard and experienced. But then after all of that chat has died down, Jesus says, listen, it's time for a bit of a rest. Suggests that they get in the boat and they go to a quiet place and that they rest and they recover the energy and the vitality that had been lost through their ministry. I want to underline the importance of rest and recovery. It's a theme in Scripture from the very beginning when God created the earth, and on the seventh day, God himself rested. The theme is repeated over and over and over again through both the Old and New Testament. The importance of rest, the importance of balance. You see, when we fail to rest, when we become run down, when we fail to take that pause to reconnect with sleep and with good food and with family and with Jesus, when we fail to recover our energy and our vitality, we put everything that we have and all that we were designed to be and created to do at risk. I don't know about you, but when I'm overtired, I tend not to be the most positive fellow you ever met. When we're tired, we tend to make poor decisions. We tend to give our problems more weight, more influence than they deserve. We tend to fail to keep our eyes on Jesus, who is the creator, the author of our story and of our faith, and is taking us through the plan that was laid out for us from the very beginning and will take us through to our conclusion. It's not an accident that Mark records accurately and carefully the words of Jesus in his instruction to his men that this is the time that we will go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest for a period of time. Rest is not a suggestion. Rest is not for the weak. Rest is a command, and a rest is a command for all of us. We need some balance in our lives. However, that plan to get away to a quiet place is sort of set aside as we see. Mark chapter 6, verse 32. And so they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone. But many people recognized them and saw them leaving, and people from many towns ran ahead along the shore and got there to where they were going ahead of them. And Jesus saw the huge crowd as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so he began teaching them many things. When they arrive at their destination, the place that was supposed to be isolated, quiet, and alone, they were met not by quiet rest-filled isolation, but by many, many people that had seen them leaving the docks and had watched as they went and were following along and racing along, trying to guess where they might land and chasing them. And there are a few key words in that paragraph that you just can't pass over. Verse 33 says that there were many people. Not a dozen, not scores, not even hundreds. We will later learn that there was a count of men, and that count reached 5,000 men, plus their families, their women, their children. Conservatively, maybe 15, 20,000, maybe more. That's a lot of people. And when Jesus saw this huge crowd, he doesn't roll his eyes back and say, let's get in the boat and let's get out of here. Let's go somewhere else. He gets out of the boat and he looks at them, and he doesn't see a crowd. He sees stories. He sees individuals. He sees needs. He looks at the massive crowd and understands the detail of the hurt, the pain, the sorrow, the brokenness. And it says he has compassion on them. He experienced this feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow and empathy for all the people in that grouping who were stricken by misfortune. And he had this strong desire to alleviate, to lift off the suffering. And the phrase that is used here, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. They were in over their heads. They were facing situations that they had no answers for. They were in trouble and hadn't got the tools in their tool belt to find their way out. Sheep, as cute as they are, one of our neighbors just down the road from us has gotten some sheep, and I always look to see how many there are now, and they're cute and they're woolly, but they're not the geniuses of the farmyard. They can't find water on their own. They need to be led to it. They can't gather food for themselves. They have to be taken to a pasture. They can't defend themselves from predators. They have to be watched. They have to be protected. There is no built-in survival instinct in them. They are dependent on care On their own, they're vulnerable. They're defenseless. And Jesus looks at them, at these people, and he says, you're just like sheep. And you have nobody to care for you, nobody to defend you, nobody to help you. You're defenseless and vulnerable. And what's more, he says, you have no shepherd. And with that understanding, he sits down and he does what he does to help them. He teaches them. He begins to teach them many things about who he was, about how much they mean to him, about how much he cares for them, taught them about their worth, about their Father in heaven. And they hung on every word. The minutes and the hours quickly slipped by, and the information was rich and new, and time went so quickly, and all of a sudden the day had disappeared, and the day was getting close to its end, and now there was a new and unusual challenge in front of them. The disciples recognized it and brought it up, and they'd been standing and watching and observing the crowd and their reaction to Jesus, but eventually somebody says, well, you have to say something. You have to tell him. And so verse 35, late in the afternoon, his disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place. It's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to nearby farms and villages and maybe get some food there. We're in the middle of nowhere. There's no McDonald's. There's no 7-Eleven. There's no superstore. There's nothing around here, and there's so many people. It's getting late, And you have to stop teaching. You have to tell these people to disperse. We can't be responsible for this. And we're in the middle of nowhere. They have to go. If you break up the meeting now, perhaps they can stop at some farms and some organic stands on the way and buy some produce. Or perhaps they can go to villages and beg the shopkeepers to open up the store again so that they can get some food. Think of what you have in your fridge right now. You might have been wise enough to stop and pick up groceries this weekend, and your fridge might be nicely stocked, or your fridge might be like ours right now, it's empty. But think of what's there. And how you would respond if I announced this morning from this desk your address and say to everybody that's here, we're going to their house today for lunch. I bet you'd get in your car and not go home. You'd just sort of drive around until everybody had gone home. On the way home from the airport last night, Debbie told me that my fridge was empty and I'd better help her think of what we were going to do for an evening meal. And so I know she doesn't want me to invite you home today. Feeding people, feeding your own people is a constant concern that constantly runs through our minds. What are we going to have time to fix for dinner tonight? What's in the fridge? What's left in the deep freeze? What do I feel like cooking? What do I feel like eating, preparing, serving today? The disciples say, just send them away. Let them fend for themselves. Don't take on the responsibility for a crowd this size. But Jesus already has said, these are sheep without a shepherd. They had a lot of challenges, a lot of problems in front of them. And at this moment, food wasn't their greatest concern, and Jesus wasn't finished. Jesus wanted them to be convinced that he was their better alternative, was the best alternative available to them who were shepherdless. He had taught them a lot of things. He had said a lot of things, but now he wants to demonstrate how much they meant to him. He wants to show them what a good shepherd looks like, what a good shepherd does, how he wanted to prove his love, his care, his commitment, his devotion to all of them. And Jesus turns from the crowd and he says to the 12 men that are there, you feed them. You feed them. That was an unexpected answer. You feed them. They just hadn't seen that coming. That was an unusual request. What were they to do? How were they to do it? How could they, how would they afford such a project? With what they asked, we'd have to work for months to earn enough money to buy food enough for all of these people. Feeding this crowd is a huge expense. If all of us had good-paying jobs, we would have had to save up for months and months. All 13 of us would have had to save up for months to afford the groceries it would take to feed this crew. We don't have that kind of money. Plus, if we did have that financial wherewithal to put on such a feast, where would we go to get the groceries? We're in the middle of nowhere. You would need a well-stocked superstore to get enough groceries for this crowd. I was thinking, flying home last night, if you were going to feed 20,000 people and you went to superstore, would there be enough food? Where do you get supplies enough to feed that big a crowd? Jesus, we lack the groceries. And what about preparation? We have no tables, we have no bowls, no knives, no pots, pans. If money and supplies are not an issue, what and how are we going to prepare that much food in such a short period of time to satisfy the need that is standing in front of us on the shoreline right now? It can't be done. Why do you say to me, feed them? It can't be done. When the unusual and the unexpected come into the equation, I would guess that you are like me. We panic. We start to fearfully calculate the cost. We start to run through our head the schemes, the plans, the strategy, working out on the details. And it just gets bigger and bigger, and the worry gets so big, we want to tag out as soon and as quickly as possible. It's impossible. It can't be done. There's no way this can happen. However, here's a key to approach the unusual, unexpected challenges that come into our lives. If God has you there, there's a purpose. You carry answers in your life when you carry Jesus. If God has you there, it's for a purpose. If God says, feed them, there's got to be a way. If God has given you the experience of being out in the field, dealing with need and casting out demons and healing sick bodies, he has unexpectedly led you to a crowd of unusually hungry people, then you might want to start looking for a miracle rather than for a way to escape. Because that is who he is, and that is what he does, and that is what he is wanting you to bring to the situations he introduces you to. The secret of our faith is to keep your eyes fixed, glued, welded on Jesus, the author, the finisher of our faith. The secret is not to be overwhelmed by the problem, but to be deeply in love with the answer, the one who says he's the answer to the world's questions and problems. The secret is to stop worrying about what you can't do and start understanding who he is and what he can do. Numbers chapter 29. God is not a mere human. He doesn't tell lies. He doesn't change his mind. God always keeps his promises. He makes a way where there seems to be no way. He supplies impossible answers. With God, nothing is impossible. You can do all things through Jesus Christ who gives you strength and ability. Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. Be prepared for the unexplainable to occur in the situation, in the difficulty, in the challenge that you face. You feed them. He wasn't being critical. He wasn't being smart. He wasn't pushing them to their breaking point. You feed them. Well, we don't know how. We have no resource. So he starts breaking it down for them. He says, well, then let's do a little bit of an inventory. What do we have? What's in the crowd? Verse 38, how much bread do you have, he asked. Go and find out. And they came back and they reported, we have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And Jesus told the disciples to have the people sit down in groups on the green grass. And so they sat down in groups of 50 and 100. How much bread do we have? Well, the 12 say, you were taking us to an isolated place for rest and relaxation. We have nothing on us. We have nothing in the boat. We thought you were going to stop at 7-Eleven on our way, and we were going to pick up some groceries, but we didn't get there. We have nothing. Well, Jesus says, go out and find out what you can find in the crowd. Well, we don't like this part either. We don't like to ask anybody for help. We don't want anybody to know that we don't know what we're doing. We don't have enough. We don't want that to happen. We've experienced the discomfort of going to people either that we know or don't know and being forced to ask for help. And none of us like that. In fact, some of you are here today and you're in a desperate place of need. And the one thing that's missing from your breakthrough is your refusal to ask for help. What will people think? What if I'm misunderstood? I was raised to be self-sufficient and not to accept charity, pity, or any kind of help. Please allow me to apologize on behalf of those who raised you and those who taught you for not giving you the full, complete truth. You are not meant to do life alone. You were not meant to do life under your own steam. God said at creation, it's not good for people to be alone, to be isolated, to be lonely. I was created for community. We really are better together. Things happen when we come together. I look out for you. You help me. We were created for community. When you rejoice, I can tag on to that happiness. When I'm in need, you're there to help me through. We were built by God for community. And there's something special, something mathematical that takes place when we come together. There's a multiplication that happens when we come together. If one can find the strength to put 1,000 to flight, you add one more person, and rather than having the ability to put 2,000 to flight, now it multiplies by 10 and you can put 10,000 to flight. And what happens is a community of believers, when we come together, what measurement of our influence, of our impact, it exponentially grows. So the 12 uncomfortably go out into the crowd asking for help. Just wondering, does anyone here have any food? There's some food being offered at the back. I might come back and get some, but you know, they're going into the crowd, and John gives an account of the same story, but he's braver than Mark, and he names names. He says it was Philip that said, "We don't have enough money to feed this people." And it's Andrew who finds a small boy who had come and had brought with him five small loaves, bun-sized bread pieces, and two small fish that could be broken up in a way that would cover the five small buns so he'd have enough lunch to be kept well through the day until he gets home for the evening meal. His only problem was is that he'd been too busy with the crowd to actually sit down and eat. And so it's Andrew who finds the food and he brings it to Jesus with this messed up look of, well, this is what I found, but what good is it? I found this little lunch on a boy in the crowd, but what difference will such a small amount make in such a huge crowd? I get tripped up. When I look at our mission, when I look at the challenges that we face in the times that we live, at the obstacles that come into our path, with my own understanding and my own perspective, I'm a guy who dreams about doing big things, but sometimes shrinks back from getting started when I think about what we have and what we don't have, what we can and what we cannot do, who we are and who we are not. Five buns, two sardines. What kind of answer is that? What's more is the bread probably has gluten in it. And how many people are allergic to sardines? It's hopeless. We can't do anything. Verse 41. So Jesus takes the small lunch and the five loaves and the two fishes, and he looks up to heaven and he blesses them, and then he starts breaking the loaves into pieces, and he kept giving the bread to the disciples so that they could distribute it to the people. He also divided the fish for everyone to share. Jesus takes the first bun and he starts ripping it, maybe in half. And he puts half in the basket. And then he turns to the other half and he breaks it in half and he puts half in the basket. And then he breaks it. And the pieces aren't getting smaller. There just keeps being more bun. And he does the same with the fish. We need to take a Sunday in the fall, and we need to talk about the power that God gives to us in blessing people, in blessing situations, projects, and things. It's all tied up in knowing God. Blessed are they who know their God, for they shall be strong and do great exploits. It's tied up in the understanding that blessing has the ability to take the infinite resources of heaven and apply them to the finite resource on earth and come out with a very satisfying, unexplainable result. So Jesus takes his tiny lunch and he looks to the Father and he blesses it, blesses the bread, blesses the fish, and starts to break it apart into individual portions. And that first bun, it just keeps going and going and going. And he orders them to find some baskets, and he's filling baskets, and he's saying, now get them into groups and have them sit down, and now take this basket to that group and take this basket to that group. And they start doing that. And it's hard to explain. It's hard. They're seeing it, but they're not believing it. They know what should happen, but they see what's happening, and it's unusual and it's unexplainable. It's been a long time. It's taken a long time for me to understand, and even a little longer to believe this truth, but I know it to be true. In this house, in this fellowship, this community that we have right now, there are more than enough of everything we need. It's all here. There are more than enough worship team members. There are more than enough Club J staff and volunteers. There are more visitation people. There are more psalmists and healing gifts. There's enough finance. There's enough resources to do all that God wants us to do, has dreamt for us to do. It's all here. We just have to step out in that. Our problem is that too many people don't believe that they have anything to give. I have nothing. I just have this little thing. It really doesn't make a difference. Too many people think that they're not good enough to go public with their contribution. Too many people have believed the lie that if you give to God, you are somehow poorer after the gift than you were before. That giving is a diminishing project. That if you serve the Lord with all your heart, you will somehow end up living a disappointing life and will end up at the end of that life full of regret, full of, I wish I had have done something different. It's where we come up with YOLO. You only live once. Decide what you want to do. Better live according to the way that you think is best so that you don't get to the end of the days of your days filled with regret. But here's the truth. This is what Jesus says. Seek first God. Make God your priority. Focus on Him, and He will make sure that everything else is added to your life and that you both, everything that you both need and that you want. And if you give who you are, and if you give what you have to Him, He will bless it, and He will live one of the most interesting, fulfilling, adventurous lives you could have imagined. I often say I'm going to write a biography. I say that I'm three funerals away from a bestseller. The only thing that would break my heart is to publish it and have them put it in fiction, because it just doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem possible. So the bread and the fish continue to be broken and distributed. And the disciples, who know that the lunch was small and the crowd was huge, are shocked by the unexplainable mystery that's happening in front of them in real time. And verse 42 says, they all, the crowd, they all ate as much as they wanted. And afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftover bread and fish. A total of 5,000 men and their families were fed. The crowd ate as much as they wanted. You had a good crowd here last Sunday, and we had a barbecue, and I've was looking through email today, and lots of you had a good time and said, hey, we should do that again, and we're going to do that again at the end of this month. I wasn't around, but I know that there was plenty of food, plenty of burgers and dogs, and that everyone who participated was fed, and most of you didn't get to go back for seconds because you cleaned us out, and that's great. That's why we did it. But everyone went home, and you weren't growling with hunger. And there were more than five buns, and there were more than two fish, and there was a good crowd, but not near the size of this crowd. 5,000 men and their families were fed. And Mark tells us in his gospel that not only did everyone get fed to the place where they could not eat anymore, but the disciples went out into the crowd, instructed by Jesus, to collect all the leftovers. And they came back with 12 basketfuls of leftovers. That detail tells us so much about Jesus, and I don't want you to miss it. Unusual, unexpected, unexplainable is what you come to expect when you work in partnership with God. I can't tell you how many times I was overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed with the goodness, the generosity of God that shows up in unusual ways all the time. Kind generosity that comes from absolutely unexpected sources, comes through unexplainable pathways to get here. The only thing that I can say is that I'm not smart enough to orchestrate all of that, and I'm not bold enough to believe for it, but God just in his mercy and his grace brings it in, and now I have this unshakable belief in who God is and what he is like. And in almost four decades of being in this church, I have seen God do incredible things that just leave me scratching my head saying, this is impossible other than for God. I sort of believe that Jesus tells his disciples to give at least one of the baskets. This is only my own thought. Give one of the baskets that is full of leftovers to the boy who gave his lunch in the first place. The child leaves home under his mom's vision, and he has a Ziploc bag of food, and he comes home later with this huge laundry basket full of bread and fish. And he gets to tell his mother all that he saw take place. And his life is impacted forever by the fact that God blesses, God enriches, adds to the quality and the quantity of life of that givers get to live. God blesses generosity. I also love the picture that this story paints of who Jesus is. I've lived a lot of my years worrying about, is there going to be enough? Enough energy to get through the week, enough money to get to the next paycheck, enough patience to get through the current trial, enough strength to get to the next rest period, and enough grace to get us through to the answer to our prayers. But I have been to a few Jesus picnics. I have endured a few white-knuckle moments of leadership in this house where I've wondered if this is the final chapter. If this is our swan song, if there isn't somewhere, some way, a Rubenesque lady getting ready to stand up and sing the final song. But I have to let you know. When we celebrate our 50th anniversary here in September, when I get to September, I will have been in this house for 38 years. And I've learned from personal experience. I've learned from leadership moments. I've learned from the stories that surface in the pews that you're sitting in right now. Jesus always is more than enough. He's always more than enough. A young boy has a little lunch that Jesus takes and blesses and feeds, and perhaps as many as 20,000 people are fed, maybe more, to the point that they're satisfied, they're full, they're ready to go home and ready for an afternoon nap, and then he gathers up 12 baskets of leftovers. He's more than enough. He's always more than enough. Paul preaches to a non-Christian crowd in Athens, Greece, and says about God, he is the God who made the world and everything in it. Since he is the Lord of heaven and earth, he doesn't live in man-made temples, and human hands can't serve his needs, for he has no needs. He himself gives life, gives breath to everything, and he satisfies every need. He satisfies every need. I've had this sense all week that there are people that are in this room that need to hear this today. It doesn't matter what you're going through. He's more than enough. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. He will take you to the more than enough. I love this part of the story. 12 basketfuls full of leftovers, but what he started with wouldn't have covered the bottom of one of those baskets. But he feeds the multitudes, and he still has more than enough. That's my testimony. More than enough. It's part of my autobiography. He comes through. He always comes through. There's been moments where I've thought, okay, God, but he comes through. However, there's this curious thing about our spiritual memories. They're short. They can be inaccurate, and they're prone to forget the vital details. This event that we've just covered is in chapter 6, and we go on to chapter 8. And we read in verse 1, about this time, another large crowd had gathered, and the people ran out of food again. And Jesus called his disciples, and he told them, I feel sorry for these people. They have been here with me for 3 days, and they have nothing left to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will faint along the way, for some of them have come from a great long distance. It's almost a repeat. There's this large crowd, and they've run out of food. They've brought some, but they didn't expect to stay for 3 days, and now they're totally clean out, and they're hungry. And Jesus calls, and he says, I'm wanting to feed this crowd again who have been with us for 3 days and have nothing left to eat. If I send them back, they won't make it home. Look after it. Chapter 6, a miracle of feeding so many people with so little. You'd expect the disciples to say, oh, okay, we know what to do. Let's review the lesson. Let's check on the inventory, see what we've got. Let's get Jesus to bless and to multiply. Let's organize people into small groups. Let's feed the throng until they're full. Let's gather up the leftovers and send it home with those who are in need. You'd think, like, it's just two chapters down the road. Yes, sir, we're on the mission. But that's not how it reads. You see, in that short period of time, they had forgotten the goodness, they'd forgotten the faithfulness of Jesus. Verse 4, his disciples replied, how are we supposed to find enough food to feed these people out in the wilderness? It's like they weren't in chapter 6. That's an unusual request, Jesus. That's an unexpected situation. Can you explain how on earth are we supposed to find enough food to feed them out here in the middle of nowhere? Debbie, will you come? And I wouldn't have blamed Jesus if he had have said, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what's wrong with you people? Don't you remember chapter 6? It's a sign of spiritual illness to forget the mercies of God that are new every morning. It's a desperate sign of being unwell to forget that the one of the defining description of God is that he was, he is, he will always be faithful, the faithful one. The one who always shows up, always answers, always comes through. Moses told the people of Israel to talk about, to rehearse, to record, to diarize how good God has been to them through their desert years. Watch out, he says. Be careful of spiritual illness coming in to your life. Watch out. Be careful never to forget what you yourself have seen. Do not let these memories escape from your mind as long as you live. And be sure to pass them on to your children and your grandchildren. Constantly remind yourself, constantly talk, repeat. Put your fears on notice. There's no reason to fear the unusual, to run from the unexpected, to be scared of the unexplainable. My God will supply all of your needs according to the riches that are found in Christ Jesus. Talk about it all the time. Tell your children. Make sure you fill their head with the faithfulness of God. And when you get your grandkids, keep them for overnight and just tell them story after story after story of how God has seen you through so that they grow up knowing that that's the norm. That's the biography that you live in. That's the biography that's for them. Talk about it all the time. Give your grandkids the story of the Jesus picnics you've had that have come through your life story. But that's not where the 12 are right then. And Jesus has this patient way about it. He just says patiently, how much bread do we have? Well, we have 7 loaves. They're not little loaves, but we have no fishes. And he works with us. He leads us. He instructs us. He reminds us for as long as it takes. But we carry a responsibility to live in connection and recognition of his goodness and his faithfulness always. The last few days I've been thinking about how good God has been to me and my family. This has been an unusually stretching year and season for us. We don't live in a perfect house or a perfect situation. We've faced more than a few challenges, both as individuals and as a family. There have been a lot of times where we've said, why? What do we do next? But I have been overwhelmed by the goodness of God. What we've needed, he has supplied. What we've not known, he has directed. Are all the loose ends tied up? No, they're not. But according to the record of his presence in my life, I have every confidence that we're going to be quite amazed when those ends get tied up. And we're going to be able to sing at the top of our voice, louder than anyone else, great is your faithfulness. His name is Faithful One. His name is Jehovah Jireh. He cannot fail. Verse 6, they ate as much as they wanted, and after the disciples picked up 7 large baskets of leftover food, there were about 4,000 men in the crowd with their families, and Jesus sent them home after they'd eaten 7 loaves, not 5, small, blessed, broken, and distributed. Everyone eats as much as they want in both stories. Crowd is a wee bit smaller. Supply is a bit more than before. Leftovers are 7 basketfuls, not 12. Jesus sends them home full and satisfied and is confident that they won't pass out on their way home. People leave knowing that they are loved, leave knowing that they're cared about, that there's someone who is unusual, who has command over doing exceedingly abundantly above all that they could ask, think, or even dare to imagine. It doesn't make sense, but it is what we have experienced. And a person with an experience is never, never at the mercy of a person with an argument. It's almost 40 years here in this house, and I've been 3 or 4 times when it looked like we were coming to the end. And then God showed up and God supplied the need, and we went on to something greater, something bigger, something better. I want you to know we're coming into a season as a church. It will be an unusual season. It is going to be one like we have never seen or experienced before. The only constant is Jesus, who was the same today as he was yesterday and will always be. He is faithful, he's generous, he's compassionate, he is the good shepherd. We will run into the unexpected. Sometimes it will be overwhelming. But if we keep our focus on him, the last line of the story will be, we are a blessed people, for we trusted in God and we were never disappointed. I am prophesying over this house this morning that we are about to experience the unexplainable, unmeasurable goodness of God, the provision of God. Doors that have been locked for years that you thought would never open are going to pop open. Relationships that have been broken and toxic will be restored and made healthy. Sons and daughters who've forgotten their spiritual history and forsaken their God-given destiny will just show up and say, I need to make it right with God. What we thought was a dream will be fulfilled and will be reality. What we thought could never be done will be accomplished. What we said we would never live long enough to see, we will not only live long enough to see it, we'll live long enough to enjoy it. And here's the key. This is the reason we're confident. We know that without a doubt that God hears us whenever we ask for anything that pleases him. And since we know he hears us, and when we make our requests, we know that he will give us what we ask for. He will give us what we ask for. I want you to stop fearing the unusual. I want you to trust God for the places that He takes you so that you can experience the unexpected. I want you to live in the expectation of living through a time of unexplainable miracles that will keep your children, your grandchildren, amazed and plugged into faith for the rest of their lives. Some of you are heading into a storm, and you're not to fear. It's simply a way of God getting the attention of your family and pulling them back to Himself. He's going to prove to be the God that's more than enough. Your part is to remember. Anyone who wants to come to Him must believe that God exists and that He rewards those who sincerely seek Him. Will you stand with me this morning? In just a moment, I'm going to have an altar call. Oh, shoot. I'm going to have an altar call. But I want you to learn something from the disciples. I want you to go back to the last thing you remember where God came through for you. The last Jesus picnic you were on, where it didn't look like it was going to work out, but He worked it out. The last miracle, the last intervention. I want you to go there. Doesn't matter if it was yesterday or if it was a decade or two ago. I want you to go there. And I want you just to start thanking Him for that miracle. Because when we're thankful, when we remember and when we rehearse, the truth starts welling up within us. He's faithful. He who has never changed is going to be faithful today like He was back then. He does not change. His name is the Faithful One. His name is Jehovah Jireh. He wants your testimony to be, I've never seen the righteous forsaken. I've never seen their seed begging for bread. I want you just to thank Him. God, You've been so good to my family. You've supplied where we had no answers. You've been our strength when all we felt was weakness. You've come through in the crunch over and over and over again. You've supplied us with good people, with strong people. You've been so good. I want you to keep that mindset. Now I want you to go to the need that you have in front of you. Could be family related, could be job related. I know I've been praying for a couple of you that are looking for work. I'm not concerned. I know that God knows who you are, where you are, what you need. Some of you, it's relationships that are causing you difficulty. Others, it's physical pain, it's illness, it's business worries, it's financial. So you're balancing in the middle of the teeter-totter between the Jesus picnic that you had before and the need that you're facing now. And if you have a need, I just want you to quietly slip out into the aisle and come stand as close to the front as you can. Just move right now. Don't worry about what other people think. Remember, this altar is our living room. You come. Doesn't matter what the need is. Maybe it's a son. Maybe it's a daughter that needs. And maybe, I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter. You just come quickly. You just come quickly. Family. So much need.